Can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, football fans, are you obsessed with the game?
Oh, yeah.
Do you find yourself looking for breakdowns from every angle? For those who can't get enough, subscribe to Brian Baldinger's podcast, The Best Football Show, where he discusses the top teams and players from around the league each week.
That's what I watched this week, a dominant performance.
New episodes drop every weekday, including Trench Talk Tuesdays with former NFL lineman Mark Schlereth. Make sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
We talked earlier about the Cavs and their big win over the Warriors last night. 2-0 start to this West Coast trip, Jake. Is this something, like, is how the Cavs are playing? We talked so much about how people are maybe not giving them enough credit right now because they're looking too far ahead and saying they got to prove in the playoffs. How much of what they're doing right now do you think is replicable come postseason time and can equate to making a deep postseason run?
So I get torn back and forth in my own head about this. Just the idea that the way that they play on the court, it makes a lot of sense that it would translate. Like, they play through their stars for the most part. It's really good ball movement. Everything that they do is a continuity-based thing, and it's not like you're basically banking on Donovan Mitchell to drop 50 or you lose, right? Like, that's something that's not replicable because you can't just count on somebody to game after game
unless
be
you
the
have
star.
Like LeBron James, that's
right.
Like if you have like one of those types of players, of course. But if it's Donovan Mitchell, who's more like he fits into a system and he's embracing that system, that's not going to fly. Yeah,
right. So that part is okay. I think that translates great. The other part of it though is the Cavs benefit during the regular season right now from running like 10-11 deep, right? The bench and the bench depth is great. Historically, we've seen that not really work in the playoffs. It's like when you try to go 10-11 deep, you end up with guys who just aren't producing, and you sort of have to have the solidified like 8-9. Like 9 is even pushing it sometimes, but like an 8. And then you can obviously like sprinkle in a couple of minutes here and there on other guys, but for the most part, the chunk of your minutes goes to like 8 players. The Cavs kind of spread it out right now where it's like you can go 11 guys who are all getting 10-15 minutes, and I just don't know if that exactly translates, because I don't know. It's nice in one area because I do feel like the Cavs are very deep to the point where, hey, if Caris LeVert's having a bad night, that 10th guy off the bench might be the one to pick it up, right? Sam Merrill might step in and have a great night instead. But at the other side of it, it's like, okay, sure, that's a thing that you can do. Is it just going to turn into you're playing too many guys, and when it push comes to shove, I don't want Donovan Mitchell and Darius playing 30 minutes in a playoff game. That's when you want them to be playing 38, 39, 40, and then sort of pushing the limits where you have your best players on the court.
Yeah, I think what you bring up is probably the biggest question in all of this, because I think you're spot on. I mean, we saw with J.B. Bickerstaff, for example, he was only really running a certain amount of guys deep during the regular season, and then in the playoffs that got even tighter. And he had like his, you know, seven or eight guys that he would go to. And so, yeah, can you actually win by going 11 guys deep? It's not usually done that way. I think that's fair. And that is maybe the biggest question I have. I guess the other part of this, though, is like, I think the point is that Kenny Atkinson is going to try to do that in the playoffs. Like, I don't know that it's going to change massively from regular season to postseason in terms of philosophy. I'm guessing he still is going to focus on that being their priority, that being their identity, that being the thing that they do. And so because of that, I think he's at least going to give it a shot. Like, he's going to see if it works, right? And maybe if you find out in the first round or two it doesn't, then you pivot. I think that's kind of the point, though, is Kenny is going to do that no matter what, and we're going to find out. So I get at the heart of the question is like the idea that like, yeah, maybe it doesn't, but I don't see why like the level they're playing can't equate or translate. It's just a matter of, you know, going so deep on the bench. Is that something that's actually viable? And I guess it comes down to two, like if guys are going to make shots, and that's the biggest difference is postseason time. There's always the cliche of, you know, your role players play better at home. What is that going to look like when you're in a seven-game series and you're going on the road to certain places? Are your Ty Jeromes going to keep playing at a high level? Or in spurts, is Isaac Okoro going to keep shooting near 40% from three? Is Dean Wade going to be able to provide that offensive spark for you? Those are the big questions I have. If they're doing that, then like I don't see why they can't just continue rolling with the same rotations and going as deep as they are on the roster as Kenny Atkinson is.
So the problem that I think you run into is in the playoffs when everybody sort of turns up their intensity, right? We talked about earlier. Yeah. The Cavs already sort of feel like they have that turned up intensity. Other teams sort of take it to a next level based on where they're playing at now to the postseason. I think that is the general rule in the NBA is that you turn it up a notch. If you're going against, throw out the Boston Celtics, and Jason Tatum is playing 37 minutes in a game, and you're matching him up more often than not, right? Or Donovan's only playing 29, 30 minutes. So those extra, the extra time where he's not being matched up with Donovan, and from terms of an offensive versus offensive perspective, but instead that turns out to be Max Strus, who's going up against him. Can you keep up that offensive production where the Tatums of the world are going to keep scoring and do what they do throughout the year, and Donovan's sitting on the bench while he's letting other guys go, so he's fresh the entire time he's in the game. When a lot of these guys just play through being tired and learn that throughout the season, that's another thing that concerns me. I know that Donovan can do it. I've seen him do it.
Yeah.
I know that all these guys can, but when you go through a whole season of not tacking on the minutes in various points, when it comes to that point where you have to play the 35, 40 minutes, what happens in those back end of the games? Like, does your production fall off when you're not as fresh?
I also don't think you want to like test that theory in the regular season. I mean, that was one of the biggest criticisms of Jimmy Bickerstaff, was that he played Donovan Mitchell too much during the regular season. So I think you just kind of trust that your star players are going to rise to the occasion there. And maybe the depth part of this comes into play where maybe he won't be able to go 11 deep every game. But because he has so much depth and because he counted on so many guys during the regular season, you know, maybe one game he's turning to Ty Jerome to close out a game in a lineup. Maybe another game he's turning to Dean Wade to close out a game in a key line. You know what I mean? Like, maybe that's where the depth comes into play. It's like maybe he does end up running eight deep. Maybe he can even extend it to nine deep at times. But it's like different nights or different games he's riding the hot hand, or he's riding the player that he feels like is going to be the best to finish out any specific game or any specific series.
I mean, you see that in the starting lineup right now, don't you? Like, yeah. They're basically playing matchups at the three spot. I mean, Max Strus obviously still sort of the
Max
restriction.
Strus, I think, going to be there more full time. But yes, like that's the way they're doing it right now, for sure.
I mean, they'll bounce back around with Isaac Okoro is obviously hurt, but you've seen him slot in.
Yeah.
Sam Merrill slotted in the other night against Utah and had a great night. Last night was Dean Wade in the starting lineup. They sort of just play the matchup game in the starting rotation and move from there. So I agree with you. I don't think that it's anything different probably when you get into those series where, okay, this series or this game specifically, it might just be more of a Dean Wade style of night, and Sam might take the back row to the bench. You might only play 7-8 minutes, and then you roll it around. I don't know. It's just, I think the Cavs are like championship contenders, right? I think they can do it. I think it will translate. Yeah. I just think if you're going to have questions, that's where you look. Is that going to actually get there? Or is that going to be something that sort of is their Achilles heel? Is you're trying to play 10, 11 deep and you're not getting good nights out of guys who are on the floor then for 15, 20 minutes when the eight guys on the floor for the other side are all having, you know, you have seven good nights and one bad night.
Speaking of championship contenders, the Ohio State Buckeyes are playing for the Rose Bowl in the quarterfinal round of the college football playoff tomorrow, 5 o'clock kick. We know it's a big game. We know it's a big deal. Some interesting comments. We found out yesterday that Mike Vrabel's contract with the Browns as an advisor ended yesterday. And so he can now start shopping around and fielding calls and starting his interview process, which it sounds like he's going to get a lot of interest in the NFL. Ian Rappaport of the NFL Network, though, noted one sort of important thing about where he could end up yesterday.
Mike Vrabel's consulting contract with the Cleveland Browns. We helped the coaching staff and actually took a very heavy-handed look at the offensive line this season. That expired today. That means if you're a team that has an opening, and the Jets, the Bears, and the Saints are those teams, you could speak with Vrabel in person. And of course, he is expected to have interest again from all of those teams, but the timing is significant here as well. The reason I say that is because, of course, Mike Vrabel has been linked to the Ohio State job, which is not open. Ryan Day is still the head coach at Ohio State, that they play on Wednesday if something really terrible happens and they decided to make a change. Wouldn't be surprised to see Ohio State take a look at Vrabel as well. So the timing here is very interesting. We'll see if Vrabel interviews somewhere this week or if it comes in the near future after that.
Audio curse to the NFL Network. I love that he phrased it as if something terrible happens, by the way, which makes it sound way more ominous. Like if Ryan Day is struck by lightning and dies, yeah, there's going to be a vacancy there. It's not... He could have just said, like, yeah, you know, if they lose that game and they decide to go in a different direction. No, he said, if something terrible happens. But I digress on that.
The Buckeyes fans, they would paint it that way. Something terrible has happened.
Something
They've
terrible
lost
has happened.
To Oregon.
And Ryan Day might as well be dead in their eyes if that happens. I mean, yeah. Well, and so I think this opens an interesting question because, I mean, this is Lima's pipe dream. Like, this is Lima's dream come true. Mike Vrabel to Ohio State. But given what Ross Bjork has said in recent weeks about how fans are too crazed about championships and all this different stuff, it doesn't sound like they're going to make a change. But I do, like, hearing this yesterday sort of rekindled all these thoughts for me of like, oh, if Ian Rappaport is hearing that he's going to be linked to the Ohio State job, does that mean this thing is still open if they fall short of some goal that they have maybe in their own heads for where the season goes? And does that goal include, like if they fall short tomorrow, if they lose to Oregon, even in a close game, does that mean Ryan Day is coaching for his job tomorrow? Like, that's kind of where my head went when I heard those comments from Ian Rappaport.
I think he has to be, right? If you would have told
I mean, in the
Buckeyes
eyes of the
fans,
yes. And in the eyes of maybe the boosters, potentially. But is that the case?
If you're telling a booster that they spent $20 million on this roster.
Yeah, but you also got to tell the boosters that they got to spend, what, $37 million to buy him out?
Okay, you think you're going to be happy? Okay, so you're going to pay $20 million into a roster that is going to lose to Michigan, not make the Big Ten championship, and get knocked out in the quarterfinals of the college football playoffs. Congratulations.
No, listen, you know where I stand on this at this point. Like, Ryan Day basically has to prove it now. He lost the Oregon game earlier. Last week was a step in the right direction, beating Tennessee. I think that was a gut check moment for him and something that he can hang his hat on temporarily. But we know there's larger things in play here when you talk about how much they spent on the roster, expectations at Ohio State. I mean, I ripped Ross Bjork for basically being a carpetbagger and trying to say the fans are too crazed and have too high expectations.
Right.
It's ridiculous. That's Ohio State. If you can't accept that, then you should go too. But I understand that. But at the same time, I'm also thinking about like the financial side of this. And in today's day and age, these teams aren't as willing to like spend the money on buying out a coach necessarily. They also understand like the recruiting part of this. And I'm kind of just still banking on the fact that I think Ross Bjork being public about, well, Ryan Day's not going anywhere, tells me that he's probably not going anywhere, even if he loses this game. So yes, in my mind, I'm like, if he loses, I think it's back on the table that, yeah, you fell woefully short of all three of your goals that you set out for this season with a program that has super high expectations. But I don't know. It doesn't seem like that the program themselves, with the AD, the boosters included, are thinking about it from that perspective, which maybe isn't right, but that's my feel of it. Am I wrong?
I feel like you have to. I don't know. I don't know that the money is going to be the thing that makes the difference. Like, we can talk about it. It's limited 100%. I also think and know that there's people who have gone to Ohio State. I'm sure our boosters for the football program were making a lot more than $37 million and willing to contribute that to make this team win and to have Ryan Day out of there if he can't get that done.
Well, and I guess the other big question is Mike Vrabel even a viable option? Because I've been operating under the premise that he's not. I just don't think he's ever going to go back to college. I think he talks about it. He hates it, yeah. But if Rappaport's saying it, it's
feels
kind
like
of
it's
intriguing.
Possible. Yeah.
There's a major football game that goes down tomorrow afternoon from Pasadena. The Ohio State Buckeyes and the Oregon Ducks battling in the granddaddy of them all in the quarterfinals of the college football playoff. We were just talking during the break, like, Oregon got screwed here, right?
Yeah.
Their first game in the playoff, they're 13-0, and they have to play Ohio State. Like, here's your grand prize for going 13-0 and being the only undefeated team. But it is exciting for us because we get to talk about it. And it is a massive game. In many ways, I've kind of said this feels like a game that will decide at least who goes to the championship out of this region. And here to talk about it and break it down with us from the Ohio State Buckeyes on SI, our good friend, our colleague, Brendan Gulick. Brendan, what's going on, my man? Happy almost New Year to you.
What's going on, Brendan?
Yeah, what's up, guys? Happy New Year. And I'll tell you what, the day before an Ohio State Rose Bowl game is is always pretty fun because, at least for me, man, that's my favorite venue in sports. It's probably my favorite game in all of sports, which might be a little bit of a bold thing to say. There's obviously bigger games and bigger venues, but there's just something about the Rose Bowl that like tugs at my heart, man. It's going to be a special day, and it should be a whale of a game.
We obviously know these two teams played early in the season, Brendan. I'm jealous you get to go see this iteration, this rematch live in person, because that's a bucket list item, a bucket list game for me. What do you think is going to make, because both these teams are different from when they played in, what was it, week 7 at the time. What makes this time around is going to make the game different, you think, between these two teams?
Yeah, it's a great question, because the first thing everybody says is exactly what you acknowledged. Hey, it was so long ago and it was a great game, but things are different. You got different guys in some different spots. I mean, obviously the biggest difference for Ohio State, going back to that first game, they lost their left tackle, and that started the domino effect of some really frustrating moments in the second half of the season on the offensive line. The good news is Ohio State's offensive line against Tennessee looked as good as it has, at any point all year. So I don't know that I think too much about, hey, what's going to be different this time around. We've had whatever it is, 3.5 or 4 months now of, I guess the full resumes to look at. And in my opinion, like, these are the best two teams in college football. They're the two most complete teams. They're the two most explosive teams. They are balanced. They're powerful. They got a lot of guys that can make really good plays. And, you guys kind of alluded to it at the beginning of the segment. Like, in some ways, man, major bummer this is a national quarterfinal, because it feels like Oregon got the short end of the stick. And, yeah. And gosh, if you're Ohio State, the way this playoff has been set up, having to host Tennessee at home, play Oregon on a quarterfinal round, and potentially play Texas in Dallas, and if it works out, potentially play Georgia in Atlanta for a national championship game, or a red hot Notre Dame team. I mean, that is a brutal, brutal draw. So I think you just have to take the game for what it is. I expect that it's going to be really competitive. It's probably as simple as, like, who's going to turn the ball over? When they played last time, Ohio State turned it over twice, and Oregon didn't. And ultimately, it was just enough. If you're Oregon, I mean, you're kind of hoping that you can take care of the ball and limit Ohio State's explosives. Evan Stewart for Oregon had the best game of his career last time out. Can he do that again at wide receiver? But we'll see. But I think both quarterbacks are going to play well. Everybody remembers the first game for Will Howard, sliding down as time expired. Will obviously made a bad play there at the end of the game, but he, was otherwise. I thought he was really good. He was super efficient. He wasn't good enough to win the game, but I thought Will played a really good game. So I don't know that I look at this game and think, okay, something has to be way different than the last time around, because both teams certainly have what it takes to win.
So, Brendan, then would you say that going into this game, you expect a similar game script, that it was basically a shootout last time? I mean, 32-31, Oregon took the win. Or have these defenses essentially built up enough throughout the season to make this more competitive from the defensive side of things?
Yeah, I mean, I think both teams have their vulnerabilities, but they're both top 10 defenses. So, we've seen enough good play from both sides. I mean, if I'm Oregon, my game plan all day, and I say this as respectfully as I can, my game plan all day is to throw a Davis and Igbinosin until he proves that he can make a play, because he personally leads the entire country in pass interference penalties. And Oregon's got a really good group of receivers, and I don't know what it is about, IGB that he can't figure out a way to keep his hands off guys, but he's been problematic. Denzel Burke has been super hot and super cold during his whole college career. When he's been good, he's been really good. And he's had some moments where he's also really been poor. I think Jeremiah Smith's the best wide receiver in college football. And if you keep throwing number 4 the football, you're going to find good things are going to happen to you on the other side. So, I just sort of expect that both teams are going to try to play to their strengths. Will is Will is a very mobile quarterback, although he sits in the pocket a little bit more than Dylan Gabriel does. But both guys are super athletic and you know, can run a modern spread offense really well. I wouldn't be surprised at all if both teams are pushing 450 to 500 yards of offense. And I don't think that's a condemnation of both teams' ability to play defense. The defenses, in my opinion, in this game are going to be most important on certain situations. The stats at the end of the game are going to show that you're probably going to have two pretty good offensive teams, because that's what they've done all year. But did you come up with the right third down stop? Did you force a turnover in a specific, critical moment of the game? Like, that's where I anticipate that defense is going to play a big role in this.
Yeah, I obviously mentioned Davison and Biganosen and sort of the issues that he has. One of the most penalized, if not, I think, still the most penalized corner in all of college football. Tez Johnson, earlier on this week, mentioning the fact that they essentially know that. He said, range a corner from the SEC, but we know his weaknesses, so we're definitely going to be on high alert from that. Is that a mistake from Tez Johnson, calling him out and letting that be known ahead of time, or is that just sort of fair game? Everybody knows that's the weakness on this Ohio State team.
Yeah, I don't think he was necessarily like actively taking a shot at him. I'm sure he was probably asked, because these players were basically available to media. Just drop the players off in like a hotel ballroom downtown LA, and media free for all. Every kid's at a different table, so you can ask guys basically whatever question you want. And I'm sure somebody said, "Hey Tez, you're probably going to be guarded by Igbinosin. What do you think?" Like, I don't know that they were baiting him, but they're probably trying to get him to have some kind of a comment. And he didn't say, Davison stinks. I don't think he stinks, but he's had some moments that have been pretty frustrating. So, yeah, I don't know. I saw that and I just sort of said, okay, well, I don't know exactly how the question was framed, but on the flip side of the coin, man, if I'm Oregon, that's the game plan. You make that guy play better, because we've got whatever it is, 13 games worth of him not playing great football. He's been okay, but he hasn't been elite. And I think Ohio State needs to have an answer for not just Tez, but this is a really good receiving core, and Dylan can make some things happen with his feet. So it's a tough task for him.
Brennan Gulick, Ohio State Buckeyes on SI, joining us here on the show. You talked about Will Howard in that first game. I too think that was probably, I think that probably was his best game of the regular season up until the Tennessee game last week. It does kind of feel like if he plays like he did against Tennessee, I don't know how you stop this offense. In your opinion, is he sort of the key to the Buckeyes going on a run of the national championship? Because there was moments where you were kind of questioning, I think, Will and how good he really was. The Michigan game was obviously a low point for him. But if he plays like that, it feels like it this Ohio State team meets the potential that they obviously had when the season started.
Yeah, I think you can certainly look at it that way. But for me, it's a little broader. It's not so much about Will as it is Ryan Day. Who comes out in this game, from Ryan Day? Is it the Ryan Day against Michigan who, got in his own head and just had this, what felt like this overwhelming sense of pride in trying to prove it, that we need to run the ball between the tackles to beat Michigan, so on and so forth? It felt like there were moments in that game where Ohio State coached scared. Then you look at the Tennessee game, or you think back to the Georgia game a couple years ago, or you think back to the Clemson game and the Sugar Bowl from a few years back. Playoff Ryan Day historically has been a lot of fun for Ohio State fans. He comes out and throws haymakers. And I realize that he's not calling plays anymore, but when you're the head coach, man, you set the tone. And he is very involved in the offensive game plan all week. So I think Will Howard is... He's been in enough big moments this year where he's both struggled and tasted some success. I don't think he's going to be, not ready for the moment. I don't think the spotlight's going to be a little too big for him or whatever. This is what he came to Ohio State for. And yeah, does it ratchet up a little bit more when all the chips are on the table like this in the college football playoff? Sure. But, Will said last spring, he basically had two options. He was going to declare for the NFL draft, or he was going to go play at Ohio State. And he wants to go be an NFL quarterback, and so you got to take moments like this and say, this is literally what I'm doing with my life. This is what I'm going to try to do, and I can't you know, falter in moments like this just because it's a bigger stage. I mean, I'm going back and looking through, you know, some of his some of his games throughout the course of the year. I mean, he was really efficient against Oregon, completed 80% of his passes. He played a really good game against Iowa, played a really good game against Indiana. I thought he played a pretty good game against Penn State. And, you know, he really had one clunker, and it was against Michigan. And then flushed it quickly, went out against Tennessee, and had the ability to stretch the field. I just thought Will played really, really good football on a huge stage last time out. So if Ryan Day approaches this game like, I'm just going to call it like playoff Ryan Day, if Ohio State plays against Oregon or anybody else like they did against Tennessee, I don't think they're going to lose. But it's easier said than done. Yeah. Oregon's really good.
Along those lines, since you talked a lot about Ryan Day there, I want to play this clip here real quick. This was Ian Rappaport talking yesterday about Mike Vrabel's time with the Browns coming to an end, and he had an interesting nugget here that was in relation to our topic here.
Mike Vrabel's consulting contract with the Cleveland Browns, that expired today. But the timing is significant here as well. Mike Vrabel has been linked to the Ohio State job, which is not open. Ryan Day is still the head coach at Ohio State. The day play on Wednesday, if something really terrible happens and they decided to make a change, wouldn't be surprised to see Ohio State take a look at Vrabel as well.
So, audio courtesy of the NFL Network, by the way. I found that interesting because I thought Ross Bjork sort of put any of these commentary on Ryan Day's job status to bed. But you hear Ian Rappaport mention something like that, and it raises your eyebrows a little bit. So, any reason to believe that Ryan Day is kind of coaching for his job tomorrow?
I feel like that's two different questions. Is Ryan Day coaching for his job tomorrow? I would say most likely not, for a few different reasons. It would be, even for a school like Ohio State with the resources they have, it would be insanely expensive for them to fire Ryan Day and pay the buyout for his staff and hire a new coach, considering that Ohio State knows they also are going to be starting this back pay for athletes over the last decade or so with some of this federal legislation starting to take some shape here. So from a financial perspective, I mean, there, you know, anybody can get a donor to write a big check, but we're talking about a check that might be nine figures for all of that. I don't see that happening. I also think that Ryan Day takes a lot of heat, and if you're going to fire that guy, you better have a slam dunk better option. And I'm not totally convinced that there is unless Nick Saban doesn't want to, you know, be a TV analyst anymore. And we know that that's not the case. The Vrabel component to this is interesting because, like you, I continue to see that, you know, his name gets connected to this and floated all the time. The people that I've talked to have told me that Mike Vrabel has absolutely no interest whatsoever in coaching college football. So, I'm not saying the guy can't change his mind. I think Vrabel structured his contract with the Browns the way he did, knowing that in the NFL, head coaching jobs are going to be open, and he wanted to make sure that going into that last, like, Mike Vrabel's not going to make a difference on whether the Browns beat the Ravens or not. So, you know, use this time to start having the conversations. I'm sure he's probably had them already on what NFL head coaching vacancies are out there. I don't see Vrabel in Columbus. I'm not saying I wouldn't like it. I think it'd be great, but I don't see him there, and I don't personally think Ryan Day's coaching for his job this week.
Brandon, we got about 30 seconds left. Your prediction for this game, quarterfinal against Oregon, who do you got?
I got the Buckeyes, and I got them by 10. I think Ohio State's going to win this game in reasonably convincing fashion. I got a feeling it's going to be a great Rose Bowl game. But I really do think Ohio State is on a mission right now, and they've got the guys to get it done. I know it was a one-point game last time around, but I think Ohio State's going to be able to pull this one off slightly more comfortably this time around.
I hope that you're right. Brendan Gulick, at Brendan Gulick 22 on X, does a tremendous job covering Ohio State for the Ohio State Buckeyes on SI, and you can find all of the content for them over at the website. He'll be out there in Pasadena. I think you're leaving tomorrow morning, right? First thing in the morning?
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things, man. You have a kid now, you start thinking about life a little differently, so we'll stay at home for New Year's, have some fun tonight with the family, and then I'm going to hop on a 7 a.m. flight tomorrow with a time difference, land in L.A. at like 9, and that's 5 hours before kick. I got plenty of time to get to Pasadena.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Love to see it. Love to see it. Well, hey, send me pictures. Enjoy the experience.
Oh,
and,
I will. In fact, I might send them to you like every hour. How's that sound?
I mean, don't rub it in. You have to go overboard, but you can send me some pictures, Brendan.
You just said you wanted pictures. Oh, I'll make sure you get plenty of them.
This guy's going to make me feel real bad about myself. No, Brendan, appreciate you, man. Thank you for stopping by, and safe travels.
Thanks, Brendan.
Happy New Year, guys.
You too.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Browns fans, captivated in the final couple weeks of the regular season. Daryl Ryan and Andy Baskin talk about it with their podcast. It's Always Game Day in Cleveland, including post-game drops after every single game. Subscribe to the podcast now at 92thefan.com in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. It's sponsored locally by Smiley One and Bryant, Northeast Ohio's premier heating and cooling solution. Without further ado, Mitch, please. The final Mitch, please, of 2024.
That's right. Thank you, guys. I want to talk about what happened yesterday. In fact, there was a birthday yesterday, a LeBirthday, if you will, as LeBron James officially turned 40 years old. And with that, he was asked this question in a press conference regarding his age and, you know, the length that he's at in his NBA career.
Your thoughts about the end increased as you've gotten older, and like, what is sort of your current relationship with potential retirement at some point? Like,
It's very good. It's very good.
What will it be that tells you it's enough?
It won't be because I can't play this game at a high level. Because, to be honest, if I really wanted to, I could probably play this game at a high level. Probably about another weird that I might say. Probably about another 5 to 7 years if I wanted to. But I'm not going to do that.
Think LeBron's got 5 to 7 years left in him?
As crazy as it is, maybe. Like, he's still playing at a really high level right now, and he's 40.
I mean, he's mastered, like, the Tom Brady take care of your body thing that allows you to prolong your career as long as I guess you'd want.
He's also, like, adapted, I think, to the just how he has to play now. He can't be the high flyer he was when he was 25. So now he's, you know, a little more behind the arc, bit more diamond.
For sure.
Dishing the ball out.
Yeah. Well, we always dish the ball out because he would get criticized for that. But yeah.
In the hypothetical world where that would happen, that would span his career across 4 decades
in
the NBA, which I don't think barely players have done 3.
You know what? Let's start the LeBron James extending his career 5 to 7 more years, because you know what that also opens the door for, right? He can come back to Cleveland and retire a Cleveland Cavalier, which has been the prophecy that I've been foreseeing for years, that he was eventually going to come back. He'll get his jersey retired. They'll do a whole thing. It'll make it like LeBron's big day, his retirement day. So this gives him a chance to come back and still play here.
Yeah, don't worry. He'll still do that. It'll just be on a one-day contract the way that it's meant to be. Okay?
Is that how those things are meant to be, though? Usually you'd rather see the person just retire in your jersey.
Well, yeah, ideally. But I'm saying if he's going to leave, I don't want him to come back. That's the worst case scenario. No LeBron back.
You just said he could play.
He's fine.
Listen,
who else can play for 5 to 7 years? Every player on the roster
he
right
should
now.
He should honestly get, like, he could fuel content for so many more years if he does this, if he stayed for 5 to 7 more years. You know how many more shows we'd be doing of, should the Cavs try to get LeBron back? 216-474-0092. Are you interested? He's a free agent this offseason.
Yeah, he's 44. You want the 44-year-old leading the team?
Still playing at a high level. You said he could do it.
You can't do that, though, because then he ends up being the Wizards Michael Jordan days. Okay? if you get into that territory, you don't want that.
He did mention in the press conference that would he ever pull a move like Jordan to the Wizards later on in his career? He said no.
Yeah, you mentioned that earlier too. Yeah, that's interesting.
Or you retire and come back?
Well, that's the stupidest way to do it. So yeah, you should never do that. So Jordan was dumb to do it. LeBron would be dumb to do it. I'm glad he's at least learned something from Jordan's career. Like, I'm not going to repeat that. You think Ryan Day's coaching for his job tomorrow? For real?
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't know how he's not. Like, the money thing is obviously going to be the big factor. I mean, Brendan laid it out there when we talked to him last segment.
And you got to buy out the rest of the coaching staff that you're not bringing back. Like, there's a lot in play there.
I don't know.
And like the money you're sending all these former players that they're going to be owed from the federal lawsuit, like it's a lot of money being thrown around. I don't know if you have the money to like shake things up that much. I just don't.
If the Mike Vrabel stuff is true, I think they do it in a heartbeat.
Well, and that's the key. Like Brendan said the same thing that we've all kind of felt. Like Mike Vrabel to college just seems impossible. Like that's like pie in the sky.
He's told us it's not.
You want to talk about? Wait, who told us it's not?
Mike Vrabel told us that it is pie in the sky. That's not going to happen.
Oh yeah,
not possible.
Sorry. Yeah. I was like, wait, he said, did I miss something? Did he have a quote where he said?
Yeah, he just did 3 seconds ago.
Mike Vrabel 5 minutes ago says Ohio State is something he would consider.
I mean, actually, while you were talking, I was on the phone with Mike, and he just told me personally. So
I mean, I guess like money could always convince somebody to do something, but yeah, like I it was just interesting that Rappaport said it, because the moment you hear like somebody like that, an insider in the game, say it, it makes you like they're talking to people who are probably close to Mike Vrabel who have like some inside information. So I was curious, but no, I think that ship has sailed. I don't think he's going to college. And for that reason, you know, if you're asking the question, like, can you upgrade the coach? I still think there's options out there. You could look to, I'm not doing the Andrew Berry living in my fears thing here, but no, I just think based on what Ross Bjork told us and the money involved, I don't think they're going to go through with firing him, even if he loses tomorrow. But I'm not saying that's how it should be, because the expectations are high at Ohio State, and rightfully so. And if they lose tomorrow, they fall woefully short of everything they said they were going to achieve.
If he loses, I think the biggest thing for me is I just can't take the full another year of conversations and taking phone calls on, he can't beat Michigan, he's in his own head, get the guy out of there.
Well, you're going to get that anyway.
Yeah, I know, but not if he's fired.
They could win the championship and people would call in and say he should be fired because he lost.
Yeah, but at least I can just tell him that
you're nuts.
Basically, yeah, you're insane. He won a national championship. Calm down. The game didn't matter.
It's going to be kind of, if he does lose, I'll say this, it's going to be pretty epic. Like the rise from where he was after the Michigan loss to where he was after the Tennessee win, where we haven't had to talk about that for like 2 weeks or like a week and a half. And then if he loses tomorrow, it's going to be right back to the rock bottom of like, get this guy out of here, run him out of town. Epic roller coaster ride of emotions when it comes to Ryan Day if he loses tomorrow. Let's hope that's not the case. What's your score prediction?
Score prediction?
Who do you think is going to win?
Ohio State. I'll take Ohio State. I think they figured it out. Offense looked good. Defense will look fine.
I'm taking Oregon because I'm setting my expectations low. Set my expectations low, okay? I like to be pleasantly surprised. Any sports New Year's resolutions, by the way?
I don't know that I have one. My one from like that I feel like I could
Browns
keep putting
drafting
time
a quarterback,
and time again.
That should be yours. You were adamant about that yesterday.
There's nothing I can do for that.
Well,
what am I? That's a Browns New Year's resolution. How about hitting a quarterback? That could be the Browns New
Year's
resolution.
Like your sports, the New Year's resolutions for your sports teams.
Yeah, if it's the Browns, then yeah, draft a quarterback and actually find one that, I don't know, can throw the ball accurately more than 15 yards and stay on the field. Personally, like, I don't know. No, not really.
I want to cross.
I eat, sleep, and breathe.
I want to cross at least one more stadium I haven't been to in baseball off my list this year.
I like that.
And, unrelated to Cleveland, I want to see the Red Sox in the ALCS. There you go.
Ugh.
Those are my two. I mean, it's going to be a while before I can wish anything for the Browns, because they're in a world of trouble right now.